Welcome to In the Garden, hosted by UC Master Gardeners. My name is Mark Fairley, and I will be your host today. Now, the opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the Board of Regents, and for more information, go to KUCI.org. And also, remember, you are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. Today, our show will focus on spring vegetables, and we will have a special guest and vegetable expert. His name is Greg Stevenson. Welcome, Greg.
Thank you, Mark. Thanks for having me.
And by the way, listeners, this will be a two-part program. This will be part number one. And before we get started, Greg, can you tell us a bit about yourself as a master gardener and about yourself in general?
Well, I usually describe myself whenever I'm speaking as a programmer by profession. I've been doing that for over 40 years, and an edible gardener by passion, or as my wife would say, obsession. And I have been a member of the OC Master Gardeners since 2013 and began speaking on edible gardening about 2010.
Very good. Now, how did you develop your interest in vegetable gardening? And I will say right off the bat, if you've been a programmer for 40 years, you must be eating a lot of good vegetables because you don't look to be 40 years old.
No, I've been programming for 40, yes. However, actually, my wife indirectly got me into this. She wanted to start drinking green smoothies for the health benefits.
Ah, yes.
And I started buying the vegetables, and they were obviously cheapest at large stores in big, bulky packages, which always spoiled before we used them all. And I hated the waste with it, so I started looking around and came across square foot gardening as a beginning. Had 2 4x4 beds, which I planted to the first year, and I now have 12 beds, and every single plant on the property is edible or weed.
I like that.
Get taken.
I like that. Now, what I would like to do, and I would like to later talk about some of the basics of square foot gardening, but for the moment, maybe we can talk about some basics of having a successful spring garden for the ordinary gardener that doesn't have or doesn't know about square foot gardening.
Oh, absolutely. There's lots of different ways that you can grow edibles.
Can you give us some of the basics? For example, it used to be that our vegetable garden or our garden as a whole was way out on the South 40 somewhere. But today, most gardeners don't have that big of a lot here in Southern California. In fact, I think they've shrunk considerably over the past 30 years or so, and probably the average garden today is, maybe the average lot is maybe 5,000 or 6,000 square feet, all filled with house.
Yep. Yeah. That's absolutely true, and that's one of the emphases when I speak on edible gardening is how you can do it in very small spaces when and being creative. Sometimes you have to grow on the wall, sometimes you grow on top of the wall, sometimes on the roof. But wherever you can find space, you can usually grow something.
Do you ordinarily find it important for people when they have a vegetable garden to have it easily accessed to their home?
Oh, yes. If you don't have the option, say you live in an apartment or something with no balcony, you might be able to find something in a community garden, but it means commuting in that, so you're not likely to check on it. As a matter of fact, a large number of community gardens are abandoned for that very reason. So anytime you can go out, and the nice thing is you can go out and you can harvest something every single day, use it for a salad, green smoothie, part of your meal or whatever. And as you're out there, you're able to check on the health of them. You'll see if there are any weeds growing that you might have to deal with or any insect problems. It's just a great way of taking care of it. You can see the problems before they become very serious if you're out there and checking on it every day. Plus, if you're out there getting vegetables every day, you're helping a diet for a healthy diet.
Absolutely, and that's pretty important today, especially when we consider that quite a few of the vegetables we get are either from Mexico and they have different requirements, even though we have watches on them coming into the country as to what is brought in, etc. But many of our spices, for example, what, they come from Chile or something like that, someplace like that. So we never know what we're getting, and that gives us a chance to have control over what goes in our
stomachs. Yes, we know exactly what we're using, and also as far as flavor and taste, picking it and having it on the table within 10 minutes is really a benefit.
The taste is a little different too, isn't it? Okay. So having access to your home gives you access to picking fruit when it's, or vegetables when they're ripe or even a little bit before, and maintaining our garden. Is that the way you look at it?
Yes, that's quite true. And even sometimes a little bit later, because you go to the store and you buy, say, half dozen tomatoes or something, and you can't use them all. If they stay on the vine over that period of time, they're not going to go bad. So you can go out and pick one or two that you're needing, go out a couple of days later. And even if they're not at their peak ripeness, they're a little bit after it, it still tastes a lot better than the store-bought ones, which are usually picked way underripe so that they never have quite the amount of flavor that a homegrown tomato or any other vegetable would have for that.
And we're going to talk about, for our listeners' purposes, tomatoes in our, the next part of our, part two of our program. So for people that are listening now, get something out of it. Next time you're going to learn what to plant, what to put in it. Now, one of the things I'm concerned about is location.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we're talking about small lots and big homes, sun is a critical thing, and location then becomes very important.
Yeah, ideally you'll have a southern exposure, and this could be either in your front yard or it could be in your backyard, depending on where your house is facing. And if you can get 6 to 8 hours of sunlight during the summertime, that's kind of ideal. You're going to have a little less sun during the wintertime, naturally, and that's why part of the reason why it's cooler. But even if you don't have that, there are other options that you can have. But you try to look around to find the sunniest spot you can. And sometimes that might be actually elevating, going like on top of the fence, for example, and growing on there.
You know, how can you put it on top of a fence? All of our homes seem to have fences these days.
Well, if it's a brick fence, it's fairly easy. If you get along with your neighbor, it's a little easier to put on the very top. But if it's a nice-looking planter, lettuces or a lot of other vegetables, strawberries and that look very attractive, and they're a great way of growing things right on top and along the fence.
And they kind of flow over too, don't
it depends
they?
On what you plant. Yeah. But strawberries, for example, definitely grow over. They'd be safer in a lot of the insects, and they, once again, they're a very nice ground cover, and they look very nice in planter boxes.
So that's another resource for us to use, which are generally unused.
Right.
One of the other basics I'd like you to talk about is availability of water or water supply.
That's always an important thing, and this once again depends on how much you're growing. If you're like me, where almost everything is planted in, we're growing, I use a lot of automated irrigation. But if you just have something small, let's say your lawn is on automatic irrigation, and maybe you can plant around some of your existing shrubs in that, put some edibles there, and so they're going to get the water from the automatic sprinkler system. Or if it's something small like containers and you only have a couple of them, you can hand water with just a watering jug. But to make sure that it happens on a regular basis and that, the more you can automate that, the better.
I got you, because that is important. Here in Southern California, where in Orange County in particular, many areas we get cool mornings and evenings and hot middays. And that makes a difference.
Yes.
And of course, inland in Orange County, it's a little bit different. We have so many microclimates, it seems, right?
Lots of variations, and even from one week to the next. Last week it was very warm here, and now it's raining as we record this, and it'll probably be warm next week. So you can never really predict Southern California weather. Sometimes the newer automated systems will actually look at what the temperature is, and they can actually adjust the schedule depending on how hot it is or whether there was rain and so on. So it becomes a very nice way of automating this task, including giving the plants a little extra water in the heat of the afternoon.
How do you normally test your beds to determine if they need water?
Well, The number one thing is if your plants look like they're drooping all over the place, they're telling you that they need water and they need it soon.
Gotcha.
And then you can add it. But if not that, then there's a couple of things you can do. The simplest one that almost everyone has is if you have a finger, you can stick it in the ground. And it should be, maybe the surface will look a little crusty, but if you go just a little bit below half an inch to an inch or so, it should be, you should be able to feel the moistness of the ground. And your plants, once again, will probably be erect if that's the case. And if that's good, even if it's a little bit dry on the surface, that's good. There's also water probes that you can use that will let you go a little bit deeper and you can reach with your finger. But most of the water and most of the roots of the plants are going to be in the top 6 to 8 inches. So
At the most.
That's where you're going to get it. And so that's about all the further down you have to actually check.
Well, I like that, and it's kind of cool to do that. Use your finger,
yes.
If you're in doubt. One of the other things we talk about is soil preparation. Mm-hmm. Getting a regular row garden prepped, is that, can you give us some ideas or thoughts on good ways to prep the soil?
Well, one of the unfortunate things, a row garden, or what we think of in terms of traditional gardens, actually waste a lot of space in our area where we live in Orange County. So
yes,
we want to be able to use what we have. So for an example, when I first started looking around, or I look around somebody, they might have a hedge or something, might have a foot or two in front of the hedge for where they could actually plant something that's edible. So knowing that we only need to worry about the top 6 inches of soil, we can amend, that's adding like additional compost or other nutrients into that top layer. If it's a little hard like clay, maybe adding a little sand to it to loosen it up a bit, or vice versa, if it's too sandy, you could add.
A little later on the program,
okay. we'll talk about that.
Using fertilizer and some...
No, we're not specific. I'm just saying, you just look to where you can do it, and you don't have to go any further than the top 6 inches.
For your tilling or your...
Right.
Breaking up the soil.
If you want to use existing spaces, or if you have a bare spot, it's very easy to create a raised bed. They don't have to be very large, and they're usually fairly inexpensive. You can buy pre-made ones at most of the home improvement stores and things like that, the garden centers.
I've seen them there, and they look pretty sturdy, a little more expensive than
just making it yourself.
But they do look nice.
Yes, the first two I got, they were on discount, and then after that, I built all my other ones.
Yeah, I got you. Now, is there a way, or I don't know how you do it, but it sounds like you have a year-round garden.
Is that correct? Absolutely.
And we're so fortunate here in Southern California with our climate that we can grow our vegetables all year long.
Yeah.
Do you actually plan on what you're going to grow during the spring or the late summer for a year-round crops?
Yes, I always plan basically when I'm going to start getting everything ready so I can switch things over, especially in the front yard that's an edible landscaping, but it needs to look nice all the time. And as vegetable plants get a little bit older, since most of them are annuals, they look a little stringy, they're not as popular, so I'll be growing some in the back, but if I just plant seeds, it's going to be weeks before anything nice is going to
grow.
So I have to plan to have those ready to move them out to the front yard when that's there and just keep moving things around. But the biggest planning is there are cool season and there are warm season vegetables, and you'll start dealing with the cool ones right after September or October. You can start planting them, planting seeds about that time, because they'll come up and they'll get into the cool weather. And then there's a little bit warmer ones, which you kind of start planting now in our area, because we don't really have a whole lot of frost days to worry about. So,
and that's the key thing, planting after the last frost is predicted for your...
Right, and for most of Orange County, it's what they consider rare, but the nice thing is that even if you do have some frost, very rarely does it ever go beyond the second week in February. So if you just plan for March 1st, that's when I'm going to start doing my warmer season vegetables, you generally won't have anything to worry about.
That sounds good, Matt. That enables us to have a year-round garden.
Yes.
And we'll talk about that, too, in part two, vegetables for cool season, vegetables for warm season. Now, I have been to quite a few, and I know you have too, community gardens, that some of them look good, some of them look really ugly.
Yes.
They look like they're dying, they're full of weeds.
Basically, they're abandoned, yeah.
Or people get tired of them.
Yeah.
In fact, I heard somewhere, I forget where, maybe it was an old colleague, Mel Bartholomew, passed this on to me about July is when people stop gardening. Of course, here we have a lot of other activities available, but by then the weeds are, the first crop is done, and weeds have taken over, and they begin to look ugly, our gardens. Any thoughts about keeping beauty in our vegetable garden that is, as you recommend, close to your home, so people see beauty when they come.
Yeah, once again, because I do a lot in the front yard with edible landscaping, at least once a month, somebody will just be walking their dog or coming by, and I'm usually out doing something all the
time. Gotcha.
And I get a lot of compliments on my yard. It's unique in itself. It's not grass. But there's a lot of these plants that they don't realize that they are actually edibles until I mention it. And then they look closer and go, oh my gosh, those are peppers. Those are onions. Those are lettuces. What's this beautiful thing? That's kale. It's just an amazing thing. And I do have a lot of edible flowers as well, although there's only a few flowers that are really
delicious.
Well, they're tasty. Yeah. They look pretty and they also taste good. Certain ones like marigolds, they look pretty, but they're very spicy. So you can only use a few of them. But like other ones like pansies are very mild tasting. They're wonderful to have on salad.
They're not poisonous.
No, it's not poisonous at all. So you have to know which ones are edible and which ones aren't. And once again, there's this narrower range that are palatable to a larger variety of people, but they're out there.
So with a little planning, I think what you're saying, you can have a beautiful garden with vegetables and flowers.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And the only thing is that it doesn't look like it's a garden, like a vegetable garden. It's not in rows or that. They're like clusters of lettuce and clusters of this.
Sure.
So they have, it's just like normal landscaping, except for you're using edible plants.
So when people come over to your house, I'll bet if they have any interest in garden, they are intrigued.
Yes.
Very good. Now, if one of the things that I have had before I was a master gardener was quantities. I mean, you buy a packet of seeds, and there may be hundreds or even thousands mm-hmm. of seeds, and they tell you just spew it out
yeah.
and then thin it at the appropriate time.
Mm-hmm.
But as I've become a master gardener and learned a little bit about it, and I've learned to be cautious or conscious of the quantities I plant so that we don't waste any. I know right now, for example, about 30 years ago I planted a blood orange tree at my house. That tree is about 20 feet high, beyond my reach. Up there they look so beautiful on top, but I have got probably thousands of blood oranges on it. I don't know what the heck I'm going to do them all. I go down the street, this is my own experience,
mm-hmm.
and I've got a bag in my hand. After a while, my neighbors turn around and go the other way.
Yeah.
So, quantities to keep from spoiling. How do you quantify what you're planting?
There's two aspects to this. One is, in terms of trees, you can get more variety, and this takes planting, but for example, I have 7 citrus trees on my property, and they are all pruned so they stay very small. So usually right within reach for me.
Usually so you can reach them?
Reach. Sometimes I'll use a pole on the oldest one. But most of them are 6 to 7 foot high, which I can reach most of the fruit without any problem. And that's true for a lot of my other trees. And a lot of my trees, because I have a south-facing fence, I have fruit trees that are actually spaced just 2 feet apart, but espaliered, so they go flat against the thing.
Against your fence?
And it's a were a lot of different varieties. So, like, peaches and that are just now blooming in my yard, and in a few months I will have peaches there. Later in the month or later in the year I'll have persimmons, I'll have pears, I'll have apples, I have a lot of different apples. And those apples are different varieties that ripen at different parts of the year, so you can extend your season. Just having a few amounts of fruit, because these trees aren't large, and but just enough, in my case, it's my wife and I who are consuming most of the stuff that I grow.
So. Most of the vegetables, yeah. Right? Do you participate in, for example, progressive plantings, where you plant a quantity of what you use on a regular basis, and then a week later or 2 weeks later, is that a...
I usually do it in about 3 week intervals, depending on what it is.
Certainly.
And
how much you're planting.
How much we're planting. Some things like kale, you can do a selective harvest where you're just getting a couple of leaves off the plant and it'll go a long time. But we'll give a good example right now. I scattered a whole bunch of variety of lettuce seeds and carrot seeds that I'm going to, once they get big enough, I'll take them out and I'll plant them, or start harvesting as I thin them out. I'm harvesting them so that you have the young greens, which are very tasty, and those will go into salads and that. So
sure.
I'm actually putting a lot of seeds down, but I am using everything that ends up sprouting.
Greg, I'm going to just take a moment here to let our audience and our listeners know that, and remind them that they are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. Okay, we can get back on that, because progressive planting does a lot of things. First of all, it enables us to eat the quantity that we want and have them available for all year long, if that be the case. Just about everything can grow all year long.
Yeah. Except for the very hottest months and the very most coolest sensitive vegetables. That's true.
And see, the seasonal vegetables can often go about that. And going along that line, beyond the quantities, which, if I hear you correctly, don't plant the whole seed pack.
No.
Plant what you're going to eat, and then plan for it, what you're going to do after you have harvested it, and you can get all that information off the seed pack.
Yes.
How long it takes to, so you can determine how frequently to put in a clump of carrots or onions or pepper. Well, peppers, they seem
some
to
things are perennial.
They keep over and over. But
a lot of things like beets right now are one of the things, so I started a lot of those before even the beginning of the year, and well, actually pretty much all through the year, and I will go in about 3 week intervals, and at that point I can plant some of the young ones close to where some adult ones are, and then when I finally pull out the adult one, that younger one will take over its spot, and then I've got more growing up from seedlings until they get to the point where I transplant them. But you can also just keep it, and this is one of the nice things about square foot gardening, especially if you have multiple beds. You can start one square up now, and then another square, maybe the same crop, 2 or 3 weeks later, and then just keep going so you can keep rotating through.
So you know what you've got,
yeah,
and what's going to be available and when.
Yeah.
Good idea.
And you'll see in the Central Valley or something, cornfields, they have that. You'll see the corn at different levels, and that's the exact same thing. So they harvested it. It's just on a much smaller scale because it's for households.
So they don't have 1,000 acres of one crop coming in and
at the exact same time. Yeah.
A whole lot of labor at one time, and then nothing.
Right.
We talked a little bit about adding beauty to our vegetable gardens, and one of the things are beneficial plants. Do you have any example? You mentioned marigolds and pansies. They make our garden pretty. Any others? Any, like rosemary, is that what would you consider?
A lot of herbs, going back, a lot of plants, they may or may not have flowers. Now, rosemary has the small blue flowers, and they're very pretty when they do. I have pineapple sage, which is a very pretty red flower, which hummingbirds also like, so it attracts the hummingbirds. Calendulas are another plant that I grow and enjoy eating, and it's a little bit milder than the marigolds. There are other ones. Daylilies are another one that's edible, and that's a tuber, and so you can choose a larger one you can put in the background as opposed to some of the smaller ones up. Strawberries, going back to that, I have strawberries that have pink flowers, white flowers, yellow flowers, so they all have these different color variations, and yet they're all strawberries, and they're all delicious.
When people come over and they see those strawberries, especially kids, they want to pick those little babies. Yeah. And they are perennials.
They
will stay, and it's pretty easy to take care of them once you figure it out.
And they tend to spread, and but they make an excellent ground cover, and you just have to do a couple of things to prevent insect damage to the berries, but we'll get to that later.
I wanted to talk about that for a little moment about pests in your vegetable garden. Any thoughts on that you can pass on? A typical pest, you know, I'm sure as you're talking with people and they realize you're a master gardener, I'm having a problem with something on my tomatoes or whatever it is.
Well, generally, most of the pests I have, there are about three or four that I get almost all the time. And things like kale or broccoli or things like that, and a few other plants as well. Aphids are always a problem with those, and they can be knocked down with just spraying it regularly with a stream of water, holding your thumb over the hose, or there's actually a little nozzle tip that is custom made just to spray a stream of water in a circular motion. You can get those in most garden stores.
What does that do?
What it does is the sucking insects have got their mouth parts into the thing, and it just blasts them off. It just blasts the bugs right off the plant.
Do they set their eggs on your plant?
Not aphids. Aphids are born pregnant, and they give birth to life. It's called parthenogenesis. That's a little technical, but the net is, if they're not controlled, they will multiply quickly, and a lot of sucking insects are like that. So hitting all your plants, including like your fruit trees and stuff like that, can knock down and can help control these sucking insect populations.
And just do it every 10 days or so?
Yeah, about every week or so.
When you see something, do it.
Yeah, I just sort of walk around. You will get wet, so make sure that you plan for that, either high boots. During the summertime, it's very refreshing you just walk around and you can take care of it. The other big ones, snails, which me, I'm sort of old-fashioned. I go out with a flashlight at night and at least once a week and make my rounds. And I had, when I first moved into my property, I had a shopping bag full of snails just off my property. I now scavenge my property, common area next to me, and my neighbor's property in the front yard as well as my backyard. And I very rarely find adults anymore. And most of them are very small ones. And even those, I'm down to where it's just a handful compared to that shopping bag.
You don't have an invasion.
Yeah. And
the smaller they are, you have control them.
Right.
They're not that dumb, are they? They realize, we're not going to do good here.
When I first started gardening in the front yard with the edibles, it was really interesting. My neighbor and I were talking once right when it became dusk, and the snails literally climbed out from his property across the fence right into my vegetables, and that's when I started this regime of taking care of the snails that he has and then both sides of my property so that I've got those.
Now you have minimal.
Minimal damage on that. One that I don't have under control, but they're not too bad, except for with strawberries, are the little peel bugs. They're normally not too much of a pest, except for when there's large numbers of them. So you can control those. You can look online, but usually it's some sort of trap of beer or something else, a fruit inside a little cup that they fall into, and they'll grab below surface level, and that's quite an effective way. If you don't want to trap snails, you can beer traps are used for that to attract them. The other ones are your cabbage worms and the what's known as a tomato worm. These are the larvae of various moths and butterflies, and they grow quickly and they have a voracious appetite, so you want to control them.
It's another one of the advantages of having your garden close where you can see.
You're going to see the damage start, and you can look for what's called frass, which is the droppings from them, little, and if you see that, you look up above where it came from, and you can usually find them. There's another thing that you can go out at night with a black light, and they don't fluoresce quite like scorpions do, but they do reflect the light better. If you take a black light and point it to a white piece of paper, you see it sort of glows in the night.
Sure.
In the black light too. So if you take it out at night, you can find them a lot easier if you do that as well. So looking at
how do you get rid of them?
Well, one of the quickest ways is to pick them off by hand.
Pick them off.
But if you want to use something
else, don't just put them aside.
Yeah. You have to dispose of them in some way, and whatever way you find that works for you.
The way I normally do it, I just put them in a sandwich bag and get rid of them.
Put them in the trash. Some people do that.
Put them in my.
I teach them to swim.
Yeah,
putting them in the and flushing them. So
yeah.
So everyone has their own way of dealing with these. There's also it's an organic product you can use. It's a compound that's derived from a bacterium, Bacillus thuringiensis, which is something you can spray on the leaves. It's safe for humans, and it's safe for anything except for caterpillars. So these are the larvae, moths, and butterflies, which are actually what tomato worms and cabbage worms and that. They're actually the
larvae. Yeah, for them. And for rather than being in complicated, normally nurseries know it as BT.
Yes, right? BT for short. And you can put that and you spray it on the plants about once every 2 weeks because it does wash off. But when they consume it, it actually messes up their digestive system and starts poisoning them. And it's very specific to just those.
And the important thing is, doesn't impact your food or vegetables.
Doesn't impact the food or vegetables or any beneficial insects.
Very
so,
good.
Yeah.
And just for information purposes for our listeners, if you have a question that you can't seem to get solved, you can go to the Master Gardener Hotline, and I'll give you the web address. It is hotline, HOTLINE, at UCCEMG.com. That's hotline at UCCEMG.com. So if you have a real problem, and you can always send them an email picture or whatever, so that they have a good idea with, along with the description. They will get back to you, and your problem will generally be solved. Okay, let's go on. One other big thing, and we talked about it a little bit earlier, was weeds.
Yes. I just cleared out two buckets full before the rain today that were growing in all sorts of areas, making a broad sweep. I usually try to, at least once a week, make my rounds and check everything out, and that keeps them under control.
Keeps them under control. You'll probably get some.
Yep.
But they won't be an invasion, as we might call it.
Right. And a couple of things that you can do. One is doing it on a regular basis so that they don't go to seed, because there's an old saying, 1 year at seed, 7 years of weeding.
Wow.
1 year of seeding, 7 years of weeding, because all those seeds that they put out will grow very quickly. But you can also put mulch, which is a wooden mulch, wood chips and things like that, around your plants. That will make it harder for the weeds to penetrate. Or just having a lot of plants in general, with the emphasis in square foot gardening, there's very little room for the weeds to actually come up. But a few will find the way there, and they'll start growing because weeds are very hardy. But you just look around for them, you see them, you pick them out when they occur. But do it early. Keep looking. Once again, that's why you rely on what you're doing before they can get a chance to go to seed.
Yeah.
And they do it quickly. So.
And that's good advice for your lawn also.
Oh, absolutely.
Keep your weeds out of your lawn if you have lawn.
Yeah.
Do it early. And before they go to seed.
Yes.
Good advice, because probably one of the reasons as a kid I didn't want a garden, because we had a little victory garden that my dad and I was in charge of weeds, and I hated gardening as a result until I grew up a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I got into it when I was older, but I actually find the weeding very therapeutic, and even though I could use a cultivator or something else to chop the weeds out, I prefer pulling them out by hand. I just find it very therapeutic.
Right. Well, we also, for our listeners, and this is another little tip that you might want to look or consider, we have quite a few shows that we have podcasted on our website, on the Master Gardener website. That's uccemg.com, and you can go to radio show and hear a podcast of any of our radio shows. And I know we've done a couple with a UC scientist who specializes in weeds. And we've done a couple of programs. I know I did one specifically, and she gives some good advice to keep weeds down. So you can stream it on your computer, even if you can't listen to our shows all the time. Just go to the radio show and click on it and find the ones you want. Greg, we've got about 7 or 8 more minutes before we finish this segment. A few other questions I have for you. We talked about this a little bit earlier, but I thought it's a question, an area of advice that could be good, because, and that is it better to harvest early rather than later, particularly with things like tomatoes, cantaloupes, melons?
Good question.
Here's what I've found. That by harvesting early, these are plants that quite frequently, as they stay on the vine longer, gather more fiber.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you pick them a little early, you'll have less fiber and more taste.
Yeah.
But it was just a subject that
it's
I found.
In general, well, there's the other side is that if you pick a cantaloupe too early, it's not going to be sweet.
Sure.
So it's picking it at the peak of ripeness. And there's, for every plant you need to check, for like a cantaloupe, the moment it falls off its stem, it does that automatically, and you can just put a little pressure, and if it pops, it's perfect. Other things, there's watermelons have a little stem that when it dries, you know that the watermelon is
ripe. Really?
And tomatoes, when they're a nice bright red, and so on and so forth.
You need a little pinch.
Yeah, in a, well, you can test the firmness of it. So there's things. A lot of our cool season things, your leafy vegetables and that, they're actually better when they're really young. And that's, once again, the young salad greens and
yes,
things like that. So there's no danger at all in something like that. Now, going back to tomatoes a little bit, a lot of people caution about picking tomatoes when they're not ripe, or eggplant in particular, because they're members of the nightshade family, and they have an alkaloid substance that does not diminish as much until you get to the point where they're ripe. And so if you pick a green tomato, it'll have more of this, and it's part of the tartness that you'll experience. Doesn't mean that it's necessarily going to, it won't kill you, it might make you a little ill, but in most cases, and a lot of people cook with green tomatoes all the time.
Sure.
So it's not that big of a thing, but it's usually on those types of plants, you do want to wait for it to get ripe, to, because they also have more flavor than, in most cases, than that. But other things, especially like cucumbers or zucchini, when they get 6 inches long, they should be picked because they're really ready. And as you pointed out, especially like zucchini, the bigger they get, the woodier and the more fibrous they get.
Let's go on a little bit. How about shade crops?
Shade crops. Usually, if it has a fruit, so, and by a fruit, I mean things like tomatoes would be like a fruit, or even a cucumber, that's a fruit, that because it has seeds. Things that have a container that contains seeds, those are fruits. Those are warm ones, and they don't do well unless they have a lot of sun. But your cool season ones can usually, you can get away with having them in shady areas. A lot of your herbs, rosemary, not so much basil, because it loves a lot of sun, but it can tolerate shade.
And it shouldn't be dark shade.
Right, yeah. They need some
partial
shade.
Afternoon. It's amazing.
Yeah, afternoon sun.
You just may not quite get as many blossoms.
Right. But you also will get a lot of things will grow in that environment, and especially if they're not things that you normally think of as producing a fruit that you're going to consume, but just
sure,
maybe flowers or seeds, and they do well, or just nice green leaves, then they can do well.
And is it true that during the hot season that, what would we call, if we could have a little bit of shade, the plant doesn't grow as fast and becomes tastier as a result?
That can happen
in your experience.
Some cases. Normally, I'm blessed that my property has lots of sun.
Good.
But there are certain things that I found shady areas. One thing that is a perennial edible called Okinawan spinach, I found does really well in partial shade. So I have it in an area new. And the nice thing about that is spinach is one of those plants that does not do well in large amounts of heat. Okinawan spinach is not a true spinach, but it's a spinach replacement, in a sense, since its name, and it'll grow. You can grow that and have that during the summer when you can't get regular spinach.
It sounds to me, too, in listening to you and what you're growing, as a crop, you grow crops that ordinarily you can't can't get at the everyday grocery store.
Right. When they're getting spinach from during the summertime, it is not coming from Southern California. Right. It's inside a climate-controlled building or something.
Which there are some
of those now, yes.
But there is a different taste to those type of crops, too.
Yeah.
Not like homegrown.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about fertilizer.
Okay. As opposed to just compost, or...
You can bring compost into it,
okay.
Because that, to me, is what I use. I don't ordinarily use fertilizer.
Yeah.
But not everybody is like you or I, maybe.
Yeah, I have a couple of different views, and a lot of it is depends on what I'm growing.
First of all, can you tell me what compost is?
Compost is basically, it is organic matter that has been broken down, typically biologically, into a state where it doesn't break down anymore, but all these nutrients that were in the organic matter are now in a form that are pretty readily available to plants. And so there's like, let's just for simplicity say bacteria A breaks it down, and then there's a symbiotic relationship with the plants where bacteria B will take those things, deliver nutrients to the plant, and the plant in turn gives it nutrients that it needs to thrive inside the soil. Now, fertilizers can be natural or they can be man-made. And the natural ones are commonly very high in nitrogen, so things that are urine sources like manures, chicken manure, cow manure, horse manure, things like that, generally can have a high amount of nitrogen, but those are also composted down so they can be used as a type of compost, so you can get your things there. There are ground bone meal, cottonseed meal, all these things.
Do they have different uses?
They have different uses. Some have different types. There are three major ingredients that plants use, and it's abbreviated NPK, nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. Nitrogen helps the greening and growing, and so in the springtime,
right,
especially when you're starting out, you might use a lot of that. The phosphorus helps a lot with the vegetables and when they're flowering and growing and the blossoming and things like that. And then finally, the potassium is good for the general overall health of the plant. But those are the three main, and there's a lot of micronutrients and minerals that are used as well. So when I put something together, I generally always have a blended compost, and it's usually five or six varieties, and each type of compost may be higher in one of these ingredients or another.
Do you buy these, or do you make up your compost?
It's a combination.
You're a master composter.
Yes, I'm a master composter, but once again, I don't use just my compost. So my personal blend usually involves stuff that I've composted myself, which is basically all the greens, most of the greens, except for the ones that really shouldn't be composted. And that's another lecture.
Let's finish. We got about a minute to go.
Okay.
Let's finish the compost, and in part two, when we play that, probably in the next few weeks after
mm-hmm.
this program, we can talk more about fertilizers.
Okay.
But I think compost is something that is to many gardeners an unknown.
Two sources of compost that I always use are, I do vermicomposting, that's composting with worms. So I have a lot of that. That's like 20% of my compost. 20% is my compost, 20% might be chicken, then possibly another form of vegetable compost from a third party, And then Beck 1-0 is one that I also use a lot.
Let's kind of wrap it up then. I wish, and we can go on because we've got room for another program and plenty of material here. But I want to thank our listeners for partaking in the program. It's something that is very beneficial, especially in the spring when people get all hyped up about going outside after the rain stops in most parts of the country. But part two will feature a few other key ingredients to our vegetable gardening, the spring vegetable gardening in particular. We're going to talk about fertilizer, finish up the compost, seeds versus transplants, sunlight, AM, PM, which is better, etc. And then we'll get into good spring vegetables for a successful garden. Thank you again, listeners. Talk to you later.